Hi, welcome back to Cambridge Inside Out. I am Judy Nathans.
I really am still Robert Winters.
Yes.
Live with it.
There you are. Saw you on the TV last night.
Yeah, our lovely city council meeting.
Yes.
So there were a few other items. There's a lot of other wonderful things happening in the
there
world.
There were 16 policy orders, but only a few got pulled to discuss.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think largely because they had moved this whole thing related to the trees right up to the front of the
True.
Meeting.
True, and some of the others endorsing some other stuff that had been out there, so they weren't really controversial.
Yeah. One of the things that I actually found inevitable, but it was one of the responses from the city manager. So there was an order filed maybe 2 months ago. I think it was December. Having to do with a construction vehicle or a contractor who's operating in the city had a political message on the side of the truck. And, you know, and I had first seen this on Facebook. I'm going to be real clear about it. And one of the city councilors saying, well, this is outrageous that they should be going through the streets of Cambridge. I think the truck had said something like, make America great
was
again.
Was it like blasting it or was it just like a bumper sticker?
It's just on the side of the truck.
Oh, like really big.
Yeah, it was pretty big, yeah.
Okay.
You know, but you know, you
it's
see
like,
stuff like that.
It was
that.
Like doing a you-know-what to Cambridge.
The thing is, they do business.
Yeah.
They don't put it on just for Cambridge.
Who knows?
They may be coming out of New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
They may,
whatever.
Who knows, right?
Yeah.
But it's on the truck, right? And, you know, and the way it works under Chapter 30B in public bidding laws is, you know, it's the lowest qualified bidder gets a contract, whatever. There's no condition.
Right. You can only do non-controversial.
Right. So anyway, so some city councilors got it into their head that we ought to pass a law that said you can. And then, of course, you'd have to do it uniformly, they thought, by then saying, well, no contractor can put any sort of messaging on there other than
name, Bernie,
rank, and serial number.
Yeah, no Bernie, nothing, right? No Bernie or bust.
And, you know, and when that order was filed, I just said to myself, oh, come on, you know.
Really?
I mean, I'll do Nancy Glow's job for her. I mean,
yeah.
I could write that legal opinion.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be able to cite all the cases, but I'll tell you what the result is.
It's like,
It's free speech, you know. The thing is that, you know, you can do it and live with it. Just live with it, you know?
So, but it did go to the city solicitor?
Went to the city solicitor, and city solicitor's opinion came back, and it was, I really love these reports because it really does give the framework for all the legal precedents,
yeah.
And it's nice to read. But in the end, it said, like, well, if we try and restrict this, it's pretty much a lock that somebody will file a lawsuit, and they will, in fact, have the city have to pay for their legal costs, and et cetera. Said, so don't go there.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't go there. And I think they kind of knew that even the night that the order was filed, but they said, well, but we'd like to hear what she's got
to
say.
So was that brought up for discussion, or was that just passed?
I don't think actually anything on the city manager's agenda was brought up for discussion. Because before you knew it, they were already talking about this whole tree ordinance.
Oh, they brought that forward. That's true.
Thing.
Yeah.
So I think they just, you know, snapped their fingers and did the city manager's agenda away. So it was all done pretty quick. Right.
What was the other...
Well, one thing, just say briefly, there was one resolution from Denise Simmons. There are actually a couple. One was on the death of Paula Schreiber, which was really heartfelt. But another one was from Councillor Simmons, sort of basically a kind of a, you know, note to Red Mitchell. This fellow, Red is 91 years old, been a friend
of... I was glad to see he was still alive, because sometimes...
Yeah, you worry about
that,
right?
Wow,
and
good for him.
Red is this wonderful guy. I think I've mentioned, I did a quote, we were talking about Watch Night, which I learned about from him.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from this guy.
Where does he live?
He lives in Cambridge. I think he's living in the Mannings, but I'm not 100% sure.
I'm going to go there, by the way, for a River Street working group.
That's right. That's happening tonight, actually.
6 to 8.
6 to 8, right. So, but anyway, Red is a great guy, and a very interesting, long history. The Prince Hall Monument that they built on the Cambridge Common, he was really the driving force in getting that established. He's a tremendous student of history, early American history. And he and I love talking with Red.
So you've known him for many years?
I haven't known him for many years. I've known him for a few years, and really through Councillor Simmons. But I really like the guy. And so it was really nice to sort of see a resolution, you know, for Red.
Yeah.
And I absolutely will follow through on this. And I'll say this to anybody, too. One of the really nicest little historical things anybody can do, it's on the Red Line, is to go down to Quincy and go to the Adams National Historical Site.
Yeah.
You can go to the home where John Adams, right, where he passed away, where he spoke his last words, Thomas Jefferson lives. You go right into the Homestead House in there. It's this incredible library. John Quincy Adams lived there. It's just an incredibly inspiring place to go.
Now, is there
And Red docent? Hasn't been there. Oh. There's great. The docents are great there.
Because I was going to say, I like to be guided.
These docents at that site are wonderful. So I was there this past year. I'm going back.
Oh, please let me know.
Okay.
Because I will never go on my own.
Then it'll be a triple date because I'm going to go with Red.
Oh, well, right. No, I'll let you just go alone.
No.
Maybe we can have a group.
We can have a group maybe go down there. It would be wonderful, right?
All right.
Well, but it's on the Red Line, really.
It's great.
Do it. It's definitely do it. So anyway, that's one other thing. Something that got a little bit of discussion, there was a city council order, just a basic policy order, you know, with a lot of whereases about standing in opposition to the proposed fare increase for MBTA.
Which is a what, 6-point-something
6-point-something percent. And, you know, and a lot of people I respect are saying, like, we should be protesting this because, well, what's the T done for us lately, et cetera.
How are we going to get people out of their cars if they have to pay more? But
it's 10 cents, iffy thing. It's not gonna make a big right. difference. It's an iffy argument. But, you know, they say, well, research shows that, in fact, when they've done increases in the fares, that there's then a decrease in ridership.
I can't believe that.
I think
not around with all this transit-oriented housing being built and people not having cars. What do they think they're doing?
You know, and then people say, well, there's also studies saying that cars on the road are really, you know, reaching all-time point of terrible congestion or whatever.
Wow.
But, you know, what I don't like, and listen, I don't want a fare increase.
No money.
So tell me, well, where was the suggestion of where the revenue is supposed to come from?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, that's the legislature's purview,
so
not
many
the
needs.
City council.
I mean, I'm not being facetious.
There's a lot of needs.
Yeah.
But there's another incredibly, you know, now I'm going to again sound like the guy who taught statistics class. You know, when you say that a 6-point-something percent fare increase is going to cause a 3% decline in ridership and whatever. I said, you know, there are confounding factors. For example, and I think everybody has noted this to be true, is that there has been at the same time a significant increase in the use of Uber and Lyft.
Oh, Uber and Lyft is like all over the place.
TNCs,
regardless of what they do with the fares. I really agree with that.
So if you say, well, when they raised the fare, then ridership went down. I said, well, maybe ridership also was going down because
of Lyft and Uber.
You know,
that's whether, all the people, the young you know, people are taking those.
And whether I like it or not, if they can give you point to point and if the fare is not horrible, that's going to siphon off some of the ridership
That is really what's happening.
And it's going to put more cars on the road. In fact, a lot more cars on the road. In fact, congestion. I'm almost to the point where I could be easily convinced that all of the efforts of the city policy-wise to reduce single-occupancy vehicles over the years are just being washed away because, you know, there's, you know, one in every
six cars. But those cars don't live here, though. They come from New Hampshire. They come from the suburb. They come from Brockton. They come to get the fares.
Some may be here, but the thing is a lot of them are coming from elsewhere. So what we're doing, rather than saying we're going to, you know, encourage transit, we're going to encourage bike riding, whatever, you know, in order to cut down on these single occupancy vehicles.
It's never going to take away that.
And in fact, meanwhile, without, you know, You had nothing to say in it, but the fact is Uber and Lyft just flooded into the city.
Because the people taking them don't own cars.
Right. And they're just cycling around sometimes, you know, because they're waiting to be in the right position when somebody calls that they get the fare.
Yeah.
You know, and so to me, if you want to start quoting statistics.
Let's look at everything.
Let's look at the bigger picture. Right. So how does the revenue stream work? How fair is the fare? It's another little twist on words right there. You know, how does that fit into the Uber Lyft? In fact, if the T, just by its very structure and design, is really incapable of providing the services that Uber and Lyft do, you know, I can't really blame people as long as they can afford it to do
that. Is it cheaper to buy a monthly pass if you use the transit a lot? Isn't it
depends. Oh. You know, if you're a 5-day-a-week commuter, Okay. Right. If
then
you're
to lay out that money.
Yeah. If you're an academic kind of person who might work 3 or 4 days a week, it might be right on the cost.
Or if you work for MIT, you get it free. I mean, hello. And a lot of businesses are doing that.
I know.
A lot of corporations are doing that.
I know. And so actually,
that's the best thing you could do to encourage.
And actually, one of the menu items on the vehicle trip reduction ordinance menu was when you want to open up new, you know, site a new building, build a new, you know, open businesses mm-hmm. here, they say, well, what's your transportation plan?
Right.
And if you say, well, we're going to provide either deep discounts or just give e-passes to our employees.
And limited parking. And higher
parking.
Fees to park your car.
Yeah.
That's what MIT did. Right?
That's exactly right. So the thing is that, you know, we've been encouraging T-use.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody like me, you know, I'm not affected. I don't feel the effect
since I turned a certain age, I get a reduced fare.
You get a reduced fare then.
Love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, some people are actually proposing, and I don't know how well this works, but they're saying we should just eliminate fares entirely.
Sounds like free university education and free this.
It's kind of the Bernie people, I think, that push
Whoa.
It.
But is that possible?
You know, I think in some circumstances.
Maybe certain times.
In certain cities, certain circumstances, it's true. But, you know, if you were to just eliminate all fares on buses and trains, would people take buses and trains a lot more? Of course they would.
But right? Some people would not. They don't want to be with other people.
Right, right. But the thing is that you might then say, okay, well, fine. You know, remember a few years ago there was Cambridge Residents Alliance. They created a forum called Crush Hour where they were talking
about
got to stop development in places around Cambridge because, don't you know, the Red Line is already beyond capacity.
Huh.
Okay, great. So I'll tell you what. Let's eliminate the fares.
Okay, and then
we'll have twice as many people in a red line.
Because unless they change the infrastructure, it's going to be horrible.
That's right. So the thing is some fare is a way of at least regulating the usage.
They already, you know, people do. You can skip two people through those turnstiles. They already are not.
Yeah.
You know,
no, I think that they already kind of understand that the collection of fares is not the real story here.
Right.
But the thing is, if you just eliminate them, then that actually can create a different type of
maybe
imbalance.
Certain times of the month, maybe certain, like they do on New Year's Eve. Maybe that wouldn't be bad.
Oh, yeah. I think there are some creative ideas out there. Actually, like, for example, on the commuter rail, and by the way, I think the fact that we have this thoroughly separate commuter rail system, right?
It's not separate. You can use the same card for that.
Yeah, I guess you can put money on it here, but the thing is that, you know, if you live on a place with a commuter rail and they don't have a regular bus or train system in there,
I see what you're saying.
The price differential is significant.
I didn't know that. Okay.
You know, like I grew up in New York City. In New York City, there the subway system just
goes everywhere.
Scatters out broadly. I mean, there's also like Long Island Railroad and
it's also 10 million people, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean. But you need to have a transit
connected
system that really does extend through the entire
Mike
metropolitan
Dukakis,
area.
North-South, I mean, that never got done.
Yeah, listen, the Red Line should never have stopped at Alewife.
Exactly.
Right? So there are some things that should have been done and maybe one day could still be done, you know, to make this into a real serious transit system. But, you know, it isn't as serious as it should be.
Right.
And I can't really blame people if they choose to use other means to get around.
Well, with the Green Line extension, which is coming, that's going to be good.
That's an improvement.
Yep.
You know, it's a step in the right direction.
Yep.
You know, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay. So, so that was, so then.
So there were a few other little items.
Yeah.
Relatively minor ones. One item.
The lodging house one. I'd like to understand that more.
Okay. All right. So.
Whose order was that?
Oh, it's guaranteed to be Tim Toomey. It was. But so the thing I think if you look at it in the context of proposals like so-called affordable housing overlays and whatever, some people have actually floated the notion that maybe, in fact, there are plenty of ways of actually producing housing at affordable rents.
In an existing dwelling.
In existing
just
dwellings.
Just making it a single occupancy, like the old rooming houses.
Yeah. So one such idea was to allow a little more encouragement of accessory units, right? That's a separate issue.
Right.
But the other one was that, you know, why not have some lodging houses, right? Now, I remember a time, more or less when I was first getting here, when there were rooming houses around. My house right, that I own.
Was that a rooming house?
It was the landlord lived on the first floor.
Mm-hmm. And he rented out rooms to
second
boarders.
Second floor, where mm-hmm. I live today, was all women yeah. rooming house. And the third floor, mm-hmm. not when I moved in, it had already been converted back mm-hmm. to an apartment, but it was a rooming house for men.
Well, it's because right? there were a lot more factories, and there were single people yeah. moving in, and that was a way to, yeah.
Yeah. I would say that in a way, mm-hmm. you know, and rooming houses long-term rent, right? You rent long-term for like for years and years.
Did they share common kitchens? How
yes,
did that
they
work?
Share common kitchens.
Okay.
Typically. So they, in fact, in some you'd have a, you might even have separate units and a bathroom in the hallway that it.
You know what? I think I lived in something like that in Jamaica
yeah.
Plain about
yeah.
35 years
so
ago.
So there were things mm-hmm. like that that were pretty common once upon a
yes.
time, but they've all but disappeared.
Right.
Partly because, honestly, you need a rooming house license. There's a lot of heavy duty, I might even say heavy handed regulation, all for the best intents. But the thing is that, you know, if the regulations are heavy handed, after your point, you say, do I really want to be in this business? And then you want to get out, right? Well, now, the circle's come. We've come full mm-hmm. circle because now, if you think about it, Airbnb, now this is
yeah.
not inexpensive stuff with Airbnb. Typically.
Right. This is kind of like an Airbnb, only more permanent and more long-term.
Settled in. Yeah.
Settled in.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so,
true.
But the thing is that, mm-hmm. you know, I know for a fact. Because I, you know, MIT students, there are a lot of students, especially students who come from other countries.
Mm-hmm.
They spend almost all their time at work, you know, and basically all they want is a bed to go.
And I have looked at the prices of dormitories or that you share, and it is not cheap.
It's not
it's
cheap.
Like $1,200
right.
a month. To
yeah.
yeah. You
yeah.
might have a kitchen in your unit, but it's still...
Yeah. yeah. So would there be a market for mm-hmm. basically running lodging houses?
Mm.
You know, honestly, I think there might be. You know, people are talking mm. about building micro units and
well, those are being built,
whatever.
And they're very
yeah.
expensive. But there could be something
else
to that,
right?
But who would manage it? Are you talking about an individual owner or
the only way this could possibly
yeah,
work
right.
is if you have an on-site person who's sort of in charge.
Right. So you'd have that somebody willing to have that model of housing.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And should it be the city? No.
They're definitely not should
business.
Not be the
no.
city. Now, as
a nonprofit, maybe.
Maybe, but a thing yeah. is I would actually say
no,
otherwise.
Not nonprofit. I'd say
you know,
for profit.
In fact, when the discussion was brought up last night, there
yeah,
were some
so
people
tell me.
Saying,
I didn't
"Well,
really pay
well,
attention
you
to
know,
that.
I think one of the people in public comment even said, well, if we were to do this, we would have to make sure this would only be for affordable units, like as if affordable, in whatever that means, is the only thing that would work. But you know, the truth is that." Even if it's not affordable in the sense of being subsidized or regulated by the city or whatever.
It's still providing housing
and just
to
by
more
the,
people.
And by the its
yeah.
very nature,
yeah.
it would not command the same kind of rents
no.
as regular apartments
because most people
would.
Don't want that situation. If they have a little
exactly
money, they
right.
would want more
but,
privacy, more...
Yes,
yeah.
but there'd be people who'd be perfectly content
yeah,
to have
sure.
it. So it would be affordable in the old-fashioned use of the word.
Yeah, I mean, if you're talking about affordable, like I used to pay $120 a month, forget it. It's
yeah,
not like
yeah.
that anymore.
It's not happening, yeah.
yeah.
Right. So anyway, I think it's a good idea. And,
yeah,
but
so where'd it go?
Well, it was the city council order asking the city to look into this
okay.
in the residents, you know, the resident A and B districts.
So it's a zoning
primarily.
Issue?
You know, it would have to be an allowable use, yeah. So it's not at the point of being a zoning petition. It was more like,
right.
we want an opinion about this. We want to get some details back and to at least look into the possibility. I actually think it's a pretty good idea.
How does that interface with the affordable overlay thing about taking a unit and making more maximum
you know,
density in a neighborhood?
See, now this is where you almost get down to the point of
yeah.
political philosophy.
Yeah.
I am of the mind that the city councilors and some of the staff in the housing division of CDD, the only thing they understand is control, is own it, buy it, government. You, the only people get to live in it is you have to fill out a form, file to live in there here. The notion that you should actually have a private property owner operating a lodging house that's not in their control is probably something they don't want to even hear about.
That's interesting.
But if they say, well, if Justice Starr can come in and buy property, knock it down.
So they
and
want to deal
a,
with a, someone, and, a known quantity
yeah.
of person. Okay.
Well, they kind of think they fundamentally believe in so-called social ownership. They don't believe in private ownership. A lot of these people.
Well, let's just see. And, so does this go to them for an opinion?
I don't know really who will
okay.
come back. The
well,
city staff will come back. Yeah.
I'll read a little
but
more
I think
about
it's an
it.
Interesting idea. And I'll tell
yeah.
you, you know, I've gone on, we do like walks. Like actually this Friday, we're doing an AMC local walk of historic Cambridge. So,
at night?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Friday, we're meeting up in front of the Brattle Theater at 6:30 to 6:45.
Didn't I do that once?
Maybe so, yeah.
With Mark?
Yeah, with Mark Hurwitz. So anyway, we're going to do that this Friday. If anybody wants to come along, we can chat.
Maybe. Right? It depends how cold it's going to be.
Yeah. But the thing is that, you know, when we've done that, I've had people on those walks says, oh, yeah, see that house that really almost looks like a mansion? I lived there once. Really? How'd you live there? It's a big mansion. She says, oh, there was a woman who lived there. She liked to rent out rooms. So the truth is, the dirty little secret, is that people have been doing this for years.
But it's not illegal.
It's not, well.
No, it isn't. It's your private home. You want to rent out a room long term. It's not, you know.
To whatever degree there may be legal restrictions about it, I think they ought to be relaxed.
I'm glad
anyway,
I got this place for my house.
Right, and everybody.
For 25 years.
People are doing it. I could give you hundreds
people
of people.
People do it all the
it.
Time. I mean, yes. Off-campus housing. That's what you do. You provide for a student term. Harvard does it. That's the big deal.
That's right. And the thing is that in a lot of those situations, the rents that you get for those situations are less than you would get out of the open market.
Yeah.
So.
You know, get a furnished place, number one. It's usually furnished.
Yeah. So these are the types of things that are happening that the city doesn't even want to acknowledge.
No,
you know?
I think they do, but it's not their... I don't think they care about that, Robert. You really think they care about that?
You know, I have to say, when I was on that housing working group and I mentioned some of these things to them, they
really?
Oh, they pretend like none of this exists.
Oh,
you
come
know,
on.
Or if any of it exists, any so-called natural affordable housing... it's all going to be gone soon anyway because everything's going to get bought up and sold off as luxury. That's what they believe. I don't think it's true, but that's what they believe. And, you know, it's kind of hard to shake a belief.
That was the good thing about Airbnb, in that you'd have somebody who had an empty nest who could rent out a couple rooms.
Yes.
And although Airbnb is usually less than 30 days, I have to say. So,
well, it wouldn't be called a short-term rental otherwise.
It wouldn't be called that. That's true.
So. Right. But I think that allowing, you know, some flexibility in all of these housing situations,
absolutely.
I think, is nothing but good. You know, and if somebody complains, come on. There are worse things to complain about, you know, in this world.
Right. That's true. All right. So that's going to be interesting. I'll have to read more about that.
Yeah. One other housing-related thing. Actually, there were two other items on it. They were asking for information, basically. I think it's long overdue. You know, the city does have programs like limited equity co-ops.
Oh, yeah.
And so-called affordable units that were built as, you know, sort of by design to be affordable home ownership units.
Yeah.
But they're really ones where the idea is you live in it for a while and then you pass it along and you move out, which is, okay, it sounds nice.
Well, it keeps it within that affordable thing, though.
Yeah, it does. But the thing is that, so the orders were basically, at least one of them was...
Yeah.
Saying, well, what happens when there are these big expenses start coming in and these people here, they don't have the means, they don't want to do this. I said, you know, they're sort of one of the kind of unspoken aspects of
this.
But
I thought that's all taken into account if you do so. I mean, I think that you...
Yeah, but if you have something like a limited equity co-op arrangement in a building and then you absolutely need to do a new roof or you have to do a window replacement.
In order to get one of those units, you had to qualify. You didn't. You weren't necessarily low income.
Right. But the thing is that who's going to pay for the
capital
improvements?
Well, I don't know. So you're saying this has come up over the years?
It does come up.
Okay.
And honestly, it actually comes up in condo units, too.
Well, I know. But that is sort of the expectation. You're getting this unit at a reduced price.
Right.
Maybe you need to...
Right. Well, actually, that's the point I was going to make about it was that, you know, if you buy into something and you are an owner, whatever that means...
It means you're responsible.
It means with ownership... comes not only the
That's
privileges
right.
but
you
those
have to
responsibilities.
Fix those windows.
So, and you know, you can't just shuck it off and say, oh, "I'm sorry, I'm."
You have
I'm,
the privilege of ownership. I
that's
would
right.
Like that
could, that's what ownership is about.
I know.
You know.
Yeah.
You know. So. All so right, anyway, so, it'll be interesting to see what responses come back about that.
All right, and then.
You know? I'll just say one little tiny thing, which was that. So there was an order introduced a couple of years ago at Jan Devereaux, basically calling for. A relaxation, like right now, I didn't realize they say if you want to do like have an acoustic performer in a coffee shop or something, they say, well, you know, if you're going to have any amplification, $500. If you're going to have anybody,
I didn't realize it was that much.
If anybody's going to dance or anything, $500.
Wow.
I didn't know that these things were really high. So she's saying like, well, there should be sort of like this should be allowed with any licensing at all, and I thought, okay, I appreciate the idea. But
you want to know if someone's going to appear and how loud they're going to be and how much.
You know. Exactly. So the thing is, so I think the issue shouldn't be whether you should do it without a license, but whether there should be a different kind of
what's
license.
What's the difference between license and permit?
I don't know. You pay for one? I don't know. Actually, right. I think they're really the same.
In other words, you have to. You can't just appear.
Yeah. So the thing is that the purpose of having at least some kind of formal licensing of mm-hmm. some activities is that if problems arise,
there's legal recourse. Mechanism, right?
Yeah. You know, there is a recourse, right? And actually, I think it, I actually think that the order, the proposal in the order is not right. I think they should just simply work out an arrangement so that there's a cheap or free permitting process. Mm-hmm. But if there's problems arise, that there's still legal recourse. Yeah. You know? And actually, it was one last thing I mentioned was Mark McGovern just happened to mention, the street performers are really thankful thing. Because... Yeah, well, I actually saw a recording of the thing he was talking about.
Oh, did you?
And the volume was cranked up super loud.
So how is that not... So acoustic music means that you're plugging it in.
You know...
No, acoustic, I thought was without
No, right, so this is separate. Yeah, this is separate. Because he was just basically saying, see how much they love us for doing this and eliminating the permit fee, right?
Yeah, but meanwhile...
Well, but the truth is that part of the reason, the rationale for having the permit in the original street performance ordinance was to have sound monitors so that they could actually regulate the volume levels. So Mark was basically saying, isn't this wonderful? Somebody was blasting... Here on Brookline Street.
But they still had to have a permit. It's just that they didn't have to pay for it.
They didn't have to pay for it.
But I wonder if they had a permit.
But there was nobody regulating the volume at all, you know.
But that could have happened even in the old system.
Yeah, but I just thought there was a little bit of an irony about that. You know, the truth is that, you know, we all want to have a very vibrant, active city. But, you know, there are limits. Especially when there are people living right next door.
Get rid of those tree blowers. What is it called?
Seriously.
Don't want to blow away the tree.
Anyway, they'll be back next week with lots more fun.
Okay.
And I'm sure lots of other good things coming up. And, you know, check out the calendars if you're interested in civic stuff. There's lots of good stuff coming up soon. So see you soon.
All right. Bye-bye.